I think that I don't think you will see Mayor Rahm Emanuel's name on the ballot again in Chicago. I think if he had been, I'm just saying that I frankly don't think that he had intended to run more than two terms anyway. Now the decision, I think, will be made for him.
Fran Spielman, give her a round of applause. Thank you very much. Okay, without further ado, I'm honored to introduce our moderator today, City Club of Chicago Programming Chairperson, Anne-Marie St. Germain. Anne-Marie, you're on.
Thank you very much, Jay, and welcome again to all of you. So let's get started with our panel. I'm going to introduce each panelist. If you could please join me on stage as I am talking about you. And then we're going to do some opening remarks from each of our esteemed panelists. And then we will get to questions from the audience. Please note there are City Club of Chicago staff wandering around somewhere taking the blue slips on the tables. If you have a question, please fill it out. And we also have some that were submitted online that we will also be taking a look at. Okay, first up, Paris Schutz. Chicago Tonight's award-winning political correspondent. And this I did not know. He is also a pianist, singer, and songwriter. Paris co-composed and performed Chicago Tonight's theme music. Did we know this? Among other musical works. Clearly a Renaissance man. Paris. Fran Spielman. Fran Spielman has covered City Hall, spanning the administrations of seven, or is it eight, mayors. She joined the Chicago Sun-Times after 10 years in radio. She was inducted into the Chicago Journalism Hall of Fame. And as we just saw in the video, she is a very wise woman. Fran. John Cass. John Cass, please join us. John is also an award-winning syndicated columnist for our very own Chicago Tribune. He's known for his hard-hitting approach to politics, crime, and corruption, but also on lighter topics, such as barbecue and beer can chicken. John, thank you. Maze Jackson. Maze Jackson. Maze hosts the morning show on WVON Radio right here in Chicago and has been featured in a variety of high-profile media. He is active in business, politics, and community engagement, and he is vice president of the the Intelligence Group, which is his business. Thank you very much, Maze. Okay, welcome to all of you on this historic, on many counts, election, which is just 5 days away. And for the first time, we'll have an African-American Madam Mayor. We're going to get to questions in a minute. First, I would like to start with John. If you could make a few comments and observations to share with the group today.
Can you hear me? Okay, I love the fact that this is live stream now, because when I started doing this, I would tell people you could run back and give your notes to the mayor, and now the mayor can actually watch us. Which brings up, I think, an interesting point about what's going on is Kim Fox sinks deeper into the pit of despair and drags Tony Preckwinkle down with her. Rahm was very upset or excited about arguing about Kim Fox. And no one asked, and if Fran had been there, and she wasn't, if Fran Spielman had been there, she would have said, Mayor Emanuel, didn't Tina Chen call you, since you're Eddie Robinson's boss? No one asked that question. There are a lot of questions to ask about this race, but most of them will be asked after it's over. how Tony Preckwinkle plans to survive. What is the future for Kim Fox? I'll tell you right now, it is not United States Senator from Illinois. Dick Durbin's okay for another, as long as he wants it. And Lori Lightfoot, how badly are the pro-Preckwinkle forces going to push the Smollett deal to hurt Lori Lightfoot in order to preserve their own standing in the races for aldermen? Because I don't think any of the aldermen that Tony Preckwinkle has endorsed are standing up. Hello, Alderman Hopkins. I don't think any of the aldermen that Tony has endorsed are standing up holding a news conference saying, "We love you, Tony Preckwinkle. You're awesome." I look forward to getting your questions. I'm sorry I don't have a big speech for you, but we've been rather busy lately. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Mays, how about you?
Good evening. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. Jay, thank you for the opportunity to address the City Club. I think that we are right now in the midst of truly a change election. We have seen what so many of us have known for so long, that the quote-unquote machine is really probably a few working gears that are left, but there is not the machine that we thought of. I think if there was the machine that we thought of, then I think Tony Preckwinkle would have run away with this race. I think when you look at from, and I'm going to be honest, I really address these issues from the perspective of a black man in Chicago. I like to ask the question, what's in it for the black people? And when I asked the question as it related to both of these mayoral candidates, I happened to be on the air that night, and I remember when the returns came in and the top two candidates came in, myself and Todd Stroger were like, "God, we thought we had a chance to get a black mayor." And then we realized that there were two black women that were running for mayor, but neither one of them was the choice of the black community. When you look at Toni Preckwinkle, she won, in my estimation, what were primarily mixed or white wards. They were hybrid wards. When you looked at Lori Lightfoot, she really ate Tony Preckwinkle's lunch. Tony Preckwinkle spent the last 8 years, her whole entire career, building this progressive alliance that literally chose a new progressive and left her pretty much pantsless. Well, excuse me, I don't know if that's the right word, but left her in a situation where she had spent all this time cultivating these progressive relationships, and they picked a new progressive. And in the time that she was being a progressive, she really did not spend much time building rapport in the black community. So she essentially wound up becoming the black candidate with no deposits in the black bank. And she is now looking for the black community to rally around her and save her, and I don't think that that is really going to happen.
Fran.
Happy opening day, everyone.
Go White Sox.
Where would we be without the brown butcher paper? Where would we be without Danny Solis and his massages with nice endings? We thought that this was going to be a matchup between Tony Preckwinkle and Susana Mendoza, or Tony Preckwinkle and Bill Daley. But when that happened, it all changed. Everything changed. Tony Preckwinkle had a problem going in even before that happened. She was a candidate who had never really been tested. She had the problem with the residual anger of the soda tax. She had her ties to Joe Berrios. She was the party chairwoman, which I can't believe she ever agreed to be, because that's really a weight on your back. And Richard M. Daley knew that, which is why he never became chairman of the party. On January 3rd, when Burke was charged, and when he was charged with allegedly extorting a Burger King franchise owner for legal business for himself and for a $10,000 contribution to Tony Preckwinkle, the die for an upset was cast. Tony Preckwinkle limped into the runoff with Lori Lightfoot. And again, Lori Lightfoot was the worst possible matchup for Tony Preckwinkle. Preckwinkle had a relationship with Burke. She had reached accommodation with him. She had hired and promoted his son. She had gone to the fundraiser at his home and taken $116,000. She had that $10,000 that he allegedly muscled for her. Then she limps into the runoff after having fired her campaign chairman, her security chief, and her campaign manager. And she had only one path, really, to victory, and that was to go very harshly negative. So on election night, she begins her opening address, her victory address, by going negative, which, while Lori Lightfoot was able to be very positive and inclusive. And that just didn't work out. She goes up on the air when she still had money to do that, and now she's back on the air with a very small buy. And the commercial that she aired was kind of all over the place. It attacked Lori Lightfoot as a millionaire corporate lawyer, and it said that her record as a police board reformer was not really what she said. But it was kind of not pointed enough, and it didn't really do the job, and that was her one path, and that was it. The CFL stayed neutral. That allowed Lori Lightfoot to get some of the unions. And, of course, the firefighters was a real key, because that one... You have the ability to go after the Northwest and Southwest side vote that went to Jerry Joyce and to Bill Daley. You had Matt O'Shea endorsing her in the 19th Ward, where Jerry Joyce came roaring out of there with like 9,000 votes. Now the business community is somewhat rallying behind Lori Lightfoot. The Chicagoland Chamber is for her. You can say that Lori Lightfoot got lucky when Burke was charged and when Tony Preckwinkle was dragged into it, but you have to give her credit for having put herself in the position to be lucky. She was out there with a lot of moxie before the campaign even seemed to have a chance. I was at the press conference where she stood toe-to-toe with Rob Martwick, who is a Preckwinkle supporter, who showed up to start yelling at her at one of her press conferences, and Lori just stood toe-to-toe with him. She refused to be, as she put it, bullied out of the race. She blew the whistle on that to Tony Preckwinkle. She said, no, I'm not getting out. You can say I'm going to cut a deal with you to be the corporation counsel in your administration, but I'm not doing that. She stayed in it. She even, earlier than that, boxed in Rahm Emanuel, where he had no choice at all but to reappoint her as police board president. She made the most of that appointment. And so here we are, with an election that has been very unpredictable, with a very predictable ending that appears to be. Who would have thought that police officers would be backing Lori Lightfoot? Lori Lightfoot, who wrote the Task Force on Police Accountability report that they believe, and rightfully so, set the stage for the Justice Department to come in and do the same, which set the stage for the consent decree that they are fighting so vociferously. And yet here they are pretty much backing, not the union, but the rank and file, Lori Lightfoot, because it's a lesser of two evils for them. They view Tony Preckwinkle and her handpicked state's attorney, Kim Fox, as soft on crime, and even more so this week with the Smollett fiasco. So after all of this unpredictability, I predict a very lopsided election on Tuesday.
Thank you. Paris.
Well, I had prepared a very punchy opening line here, but it basically mirrors what Fran Spielman had just said, that there's one date that stands out in this race as the turning point, and that is November 29th, 2018. That was the day that you saw the brown paper bags put up in Ed Burke's office, and those indelible images of FBI agents walking out with computers and files and boxes, because up until that point, the mayor's race had been about police reform, it had been about crime, it had been about finances, but after that it was a feeding frenzy, especially in the media. Ed Burke, perhaps no more visible sort of manifestation of the old Chicago way in Chicago politics, save for Mike Madigan, and It was Tony Preckwinkle and Susana Mendoza and Gary Chico, everything they could do to sort of uncoil themselves from the connections that they've had with Ed Burke for many years, and those connections run deep. Lori Lightfoot benefited because before that, she had done things like called for removing Ed Burke from being the chair of the Finance Committee, taking the Workers' Compensation Committee out of that. And being a former prosecutor, she could credibly say that she was the reform candidate. She was the anti-machine candidate. So I agree with Fran. It was a little bit of luck, but credit Lori Lightfoot for putting herself in that position because she was largely unknown before that. And then she gets the Sun-Times endorsement. And then in the days leading up to the election, you know, just anecdotally, I live on the north side. People I talk to, they all kept saying Lori Lightfoot. I don't know much about her, but it sounds like that's who I should vote for because I think this Ed Burke thing really stuck to Tony Preckwinkle and Susana Mendoza. But Lori Lightfoot, I was very surprised when she entered the race because I've covered her for a few years and I've never known her to be a very ideological person. She was always a really good attorney and pragmatic, and she always was a stickler for following the rules for whoever she was working for. And so she worked for Mayor Brown. She was the person that both Mayors Daley and Emanuel went to clean things up, both to get things in order and to cover their hides politically. Because if you went to Lori Lightfoot, she had this record of being, you know, a no-nonsense good cop. If she did it, you know there'd be no funny business. So she comes in to clean up procurement under Mayor Daley, OEMC. Rahm Emanuel then turns to her to head the police board and then the Police Accountability Task Force. And this is where I think she kind of evolves. Because when she first got appointed to that position in the wake of Laquan McDonald's shooting, I remember interviewing her, and she said that she felt that the city had done the right thing with the video, that all the things that the city could control in the wake of the Laquan McDonald murder, it did right. Not saying the police, that was another matter, the alleged cover-up, but that there was no cover-up in her mind on the city level. So then the task force gets together, and Rahm Emanuel did this to make changes, but also to cover his hide politically. And from what I understood from people on that task force, Lori Lightfoot didn't come in with an agenda. She listened to everybody. They came up with a report that was damning, that accused the police department of racism. That was something that Mayor Emanuel did not expect. And what he also didn't expect was the fact that Lori Lightfoot was going to go out and very publicly admonish him for not adopting all of the things in that task force report. It's like a Frankenstein that he created. So this is where Lori Lightfoot sort of sees her political opening. Add to the fact that she was charged with finding a new police superintendent, three finalists to be superintendent, and Rahm Emanuel spurned all of her choices and went with his own person, Eddie Johnson. That enraged her. But if you look at Lori Lightfoot's career, I was surprised when she took that progressive independent lane because her career was always as a pragmatic. She's represented Republicans. She's represented police accused of misconduct. When you look at Tony Preckwinkle, also a really interesting dichotomy. Always an independent progressive, no doubt about that. Voted against the parking meter deal when she was an alderman, but I think at some point late in her career, she decided that she wanted to bring her issues and causes to a bigger audience. She wanted to make a bigger impact. And the way she felt that she had to do that was to play the game, was to use the levers of the political system that existed to rise up and to further the causes that she believed in. And she did that by aligning with Joe Berrios, the chairman of the Democratic Party in Cook County at the time, by having a fundraiser held by Ed Burke, by promising jobs to your nephew and to your brother, and to promise campaign contributions if you voted for me. And she'll say she believes in a lot of aspects of the old political system. She believes she doesn't believe in term limits. She believes in aldermanic prerogative because politics is a way to achieve the ends that she wants to achieve. The problem, as we know in Illinois, is that politics and power become the means and the ends for some politicians that we hold dear to our heart. Tony Preckwinkle, I think you can say, was about using the power to achieve the ends that she wanted to achieve. But as Fran said, she overplayed her hand with these alliances with Berrios and Ed Burke, and it's come back to haunt her.
We have a lot of questions. Thank you all for your opening comments. We have a lot of questions to get through. And I'd like to start with one for the group. There's been a lot of animus in this runoff. And if you've been watching the debates, you'll see that the two finalists, if you will, cannot even sometimes make eye contact or extend common courtesies of hello. If Lori Lightfoot prevails, if Lori prevails, how will the two work together, in your opinions, with Tony Preckwinkle still president of the Cook County Board?
No different than Rahm Emanuel and Tony Preckwinkle. Very frosty, I imagine. And that wasn't any different. So they'll work together when they have to, and they'll avoid each other when they can, I suppose. I mean, there is animus there. And you could see it in the body language. But Tony Preckwinkle will be very wounded by this election if it goes the way we think. And so Lori Lightfoot will just have to go on and try to deal with her when she can, but it's not going to be good.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that if I was Lori Lightfoot at the end of this, I'm probably going to be making a plan to really minimize Tony Preckwinkle's power in a variety of different ways. So they probably are going to attack her at the Cook County Board. I think if you, not Cook County Board, excuse me, the Democratic Party, if you pay attention to how many of the North Side committeemen are already making their moves or making their opportunities to try and figure out a pathway into Lori Lightfoot's administration, I think then you think about how many of those committeemen are also aldermen, and they will be seeking to curry favor with the new mayor. If she's politically smart, she would probably do her best to minimize the access that Tony Preckwinkle has. We know that Tony Preckwinkle has been in the past accused of being spiteful or aggressive in going after the people that she is not good with. I think that Lori is going to probably have to respond to that.
John or Paris?
I think quietly, the first thing she should do, whoever the next mayor is, but I think it'll be Lori, is to put together a financial team and express to the city of Chicago and the taxpayers of Chicago how they're going to proceed. That includes sitting down with a man that I have had differences with politically, but I respect as the hardest working and most disciplined politician this state may have ever seen, and that's Michael J. Madigan. And she should sit with him and talk with him and figure this thing out. On the political side, Tony Preckwinkle, if she loses this, is toast. And they will run away from her because blood is a bad thing, right? You've all seen it. And anyone who wants entree into the mayor's office isn't going to be hanging with Tony. And so she's done. I don't know. Maybe you disagree.
So, on the county board, if she does go back to be county board president, she has unprecedented power. 16 of 17 county board members are Democrats. Many of those are people that she ran that defeated people that opposed her. So she might not have sway with the committeemen or aldermen, but if she goes back to the county board, she's going to have a lot of loyalty among those county board commissioners.
Can I just touch that? Because I think right now what you're going to see is now who wants to be next. And so if it's me, I think you're seeing it already happen right now. You are seeing story after story after story on Tony Preckwinkle, and I think she's going to find out what it feels like to be Todd Stroger. No, really. I mean, I think when you think about the stories that are going to come. So now, if I am young and aspirational, and I want to, so let's say she's 70 plus. This is probably now her last run. Why do I give her the space to go ahead and kind of run roughshod? I'm going to start. You're going to see probably someone along the lines of a Bridget Gaynor. You may see someone along the lines of a Stanley Moore. People who are wishing her to move on, seeing that she's not going to move on,
they'll
starting to say, hey, well, let's push you. Don't think about trying to come back, because now there is an opportunity for them to climb.
Yeah, Tony Preckwinkle was already not going to run for another term. She said, this is my last term as county board president, which was also problematic for mayor, because if you go in as a lame duck, if you're only there for one term, what can you get done? You're a lame duck on day one. So she's 72 years old. She's in her last term, self-declared. So what kind of power is she going to have if she comes out of this election and having gotten her clock cleaned?
Loyalty is like deserves. They have nothing to do with it. It's all about power, and power is power. But that's it.
She messed up, though, because that loyalty cost her. Because she tried to be loyal to Joe Berrios, and Joe Berrios became an anchor around her neck, even particularly in the black community. She did the right thing, according to
the
party.
Thank you for that. Let's move on. We've got a bunch of big stack of things. Lively conversation is welcome. Okay. We've got several questions about the Jussie Smollett situation. One from Michael Bauer, who is the finance chair for the chair of Lori Lightfoot's campaign. One from, is it Tony Palmer? Tony Palmer, and one from former federal prosecutor here in front, Dwayne Duskins. Then they all center around the impact that the Jussie Smollett case and its outcome will affect Tuesday's election. Anybody?
Will it affect Tuesday's election? The main thing that a mayor can do is appoint people to work and do jobs. Delegate authority. You see some mayors that don't do that well, and they're called Rahm Emanuel, and everyone doesn't like that. You know, people get tired of it. But Mayor Richard M. Daley, Mayor Richard Daley, most of the mayors I've known that have had success do that. Tony Preckwinkle delegated her authority in a sense. She elected Kim Fox. Kim Fox had one heater case in her life, counselor, and she couldn't handle it. One heater case, and she crumbled like a cookie. And that is disastrous for Tony Preckwinkle, because Tony Preckwinkle owns her. And anyone who doesn't want to say it is just trying to do Tony a favor. Tony owns this mess. She put her in. And whoever decided, I'm going to go talk to Michelle Obama's celebrity friends, should have first called her friends at the United States Attorney's Office, or those who were still working there, and say, you know what? I'm getting a call from Tina Chen. What do you guys think? Do you think I should take that call? But she didn't, did she? One last thing.
Yes,
I'm sorry. In this business, whether you're on our side or whether you're on the candidate's side, or whether you're a prosecutor or whether you're a judge, there are people that are going to find out what you like. That's their job. They will find out what you like. They will find out your appetite, and they will provide it to you. Mm-hmm. And the deal is, if you want to survive in this, is if you're a star chaser, you probably better not be picking up phone calls from to hang out with the cast at Empire. Just saying.
So ten seconds, please limit your follow-up comments.
Sorry, Madam Chairman.
Mays, Paris, Fran.
Go ahead.
The election was over, I think, before that. It just adds a little fuel to the fire, but not much. It really was already decided.
I think it's an issue that's resonated more nationally, politically. But I do think that both candidates do have to be tepid, because I think there's a lot in the African-American community saying, why the outrage over this? What about, you know, what about other offenders that are sitting in jail? And there's no media attention on that. So neither candidate can just go out and completely throw Kim Fox under the bus.
Okay,
Rahm
thank
kicked
you.
Off that outrage, though. I will say that when he went on his tirade, because I think we were all kind of like, get that Jussie. And then when Rahm went on the tirade, it was like, wait, you just did all of these same things in the Jason Van Dyke. Okay, I'm not mad at Jussie Smollett. We're back to you again.
Right. Okay, interested citizen Carlos Ponce, we had the same question about the working relationship with between a potential Mayor Lightfoot and Cook County Board President. I think we addressed that. All right. Next up, Jim Turman, JTPR. In the recent past, the mayor had solid control of the Chicago City Council. How do you think the relationship will be with the next mayor?
Well, how's Pat O'Connor doing?
Oh, radical.
Yeah, I think that the council is going to take a sharp turn to the left. Lori Lightfoot, if she's elected, will have her hands full because the expectations on social demands are going to be great. There's a lot of idealism about how these things can be accomplished, and there's no money. And there's a billion-dollar bill looming out there for pensions and another $2 billion for replacing the lead water pipes. So it's going to be very tough. And then add to that the fact that she's going to have to make accommodations, which reformers don't like to do. But you have to make accommodations to get your programs through. Who's going to be her floor leader? Who's going to be the finance chairman? Will Ed Burke be lurking out there with the bodies that he knows that are buried all over the building? Will he be messing with her in some kind of way while he's still around? And so it's going to be a very, very tough road to hoe. She will have to quickly form a coalition of aldermen together to get 26 votes for the programs that she needs, and yet the council's going to try to reorganize itself because that's what they are supposed to do. They never have done because the mayor always dictated who the floor leader was, who the committee chairman were. So we'll see.
Anybody?
There will be factions. I think that we saw before council wars, I think this will be fractured council wars because I think you've got the progressives who thought they were the progressives, and now there's this group that has emerged to the left of them. And so where do they go? I think with all of the change in city council, seniority is going to play a role because you got a lot of people that are leaving or coming. I would say that 1 through 26, if I was in the council, if I was 1 through 26, I'd stick together and you just got to come see me.
John?
The one thing that many of you know from dealing with the council is that there are the show ponies and there are the hardworking aldermen. There are two kinds of legislators. The ones that show up on, direct screaming matches against Lori Lightfoot, like what's the one from 30? What's the 30th Ward Alderman? Like that's a show pony. Then there are the others that do their work in the committee. And those are the ones that many of you as consultants are trying to talk to and advance programs. And those things, that's what Lori Lightfoot needs, is a understanding of who those aldermen are and how, and the process of it. The problem is that for many years, Burke and also Pat Hewells, who's no longer there, had control over that process and how young aldermen learned. She needs a crash course. I would nominate Jay Doherty and Tom Donovan to sit down with her.
I could go with
Fran or Paris.
Well, I agree with what everyone said. I'll just add one little anecdote that a longtime alderman told me. He's like, you know what? I think I want to get out of here. And he's going to win his election. He's like, we're going to have a bunch of Tasmanian devils, running around. And there's a lot of these Democratic people who self-describe as Democratic socialists who are coming in, as Fran said, with a lot of idealism. But there's also a lot of pressure on them to change the job of aldermen, taking away aldermanic prerogative and making the body more legislative and not so much being the fiefdom of your little kingdom. Or the head of your little fiefdom, so that means we could have 4 years of complete inaction. I mean, things got done under Daley, things got done under Emanuel. You may not like it, but and Lori Lightfoot's going to be tested. She might be a one term mayor, or she might have lots of people if she wins. Lots of candidates stepping up to try and run against her because whatever she does, she is going to be very unpopular with somebody. Doesn't matter.
Let's just add one little wrinkle to that remap. That's another big hot potato. Yeah.
And she believes in independent redrawing
and
of the maps.
You know why she does? She does because this off my plate. I got too many other things on the plate. Because so good if she can punt that over to an independent commission, fine. But who appoints the commission? So she still is going to have a problem. We have a black exodus from Chicago. There is going to have to be a reduction in black wards. Hispanics are going to demand more Hispanic wards. And there's going to be a fight over whose ox gets gored.
Yep.
And that's going to be a real problem.
All right. This one, I believe it's from Jane Grover. Jane Grover? Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, CMAP. little anecdote and a little note here from Jane. She's not a member, but her father, Bob, is. The new mayor will be fully occupied by Chicago's challenges, but Chicago does not exist in a vacuum, really. What's your advice to the next mayor on working with Chicago's suburban partners on regional challenges, notwithstanding that we're going for statehood? But go ahead. John, you want to tackle that one?
What is my advice to her with respect to?
The next mayor, in terms of working with the suburban partners on regional challenges, not just focusing on the city limits.
I think the first job, yeah, fine. Go have a meeting. Call the newspapers in and like have press conference. Oh, I'm working with the Blue Ribbon panel, and then get your work done. Go see Mike Madigan. Talk about what you have to do. Get your business people together. Get your relationships with the cops in order. Figure out how that thing called the City Council of Chicago really works. And you only have like a few days to do it. So I hope Lori Lightfoot was good at tests, because this is a crash course and there's no failure, you know? Failure means, I don't know what it means, but it's not good. It's not good for her, you know? She can't fail, because the city can't fail.
I think suburban cooperation is probably the least of her problems, but there are common problems that they have. They all need a transportation bill.
Yes.
They all need that. They all need maybe pension relief. So she can try to reach, you know, a consensus with them on things that they share that they all need. But that really is a backseat to the local problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, neither candidate has given an answer, an adequate answer on how they're going to solve the pension funding crisis and the fact that the city's strangled by debt and bills it can't pay. And they keep saying, we're going to go to Springfield, we're going to get part of the progressive income tax if that passed, we're going to get marijuana tax, we're going to get casino revenue. No, that's going to solve about 1/100th of the problem, if that all materializes. So I think the suburbs and the city keep saying, well, state, bail us out. Well, I think the state is saying, who's going to bail us out? One thing I think they can sort of get some help on is on their pension funds. There is a movement to possibly have the state absorb Chicago's very beleaguered pension funds and just kind of consolidate all these horribly funded, nightmarish funds into one giant state fund, and that might provide some relief for taxpayers in Chicago. But beyond that, you got to look to yourself for your own solutions. I mean, you can't go to the person above you.
Notice no one's mentioned the governor of Illinois in half an hour of talking about this. No one's mentioned him once. Tip of the hat to you, Governor Pritzker.
Okay. We got a question for John.
Yes.
We're going to move to a few of our online submittals. Mm-hmm. From Bob Eater. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Mm-hmm. Do they have the ward where they're calling from? No? Okay, go on.
He is with the Park number 540 Community Garden Group, and his question to John Cass is, given that neither candidate is willing to rein in retirement benefits, which one is the less worse alternative for the city?
That would be an endorsement, in a sense. And I don't make them personally, but as a member of the Tribune editorial board, I will say that we are happily and proud to have endorsed Lori Lightfoot for mayor of Chicago. One thing interesting, can I? Within a day, 24 hours, which of the panel, the question should be, which of the panel will write the first story after the election on Democrats thinking Lori Lightfoot might be a perfect vice presidential nominee? Who does that first? Because I brought it up to an august member, two members of this in this room, and they're like, come on, John, don't start that. But it will start. It'll start. Just know that.
Why vice presidentials?
Asks Michael Bauer, chairman of the Lightfoot campaign.
I think JB's working on president now.
Yeah, yeah.
This is for everyone from Sarah Tui with the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. In your opinion, which candidate will have a more positive effect on Chicago's business community?
Lori Lightfoot. I think that Lori Lightfoot, first of all, she's an attorney, so she does deals, right? That's her whole life has been probably making deals. I think that when you look at Toni Preckwinkle, she is looking to, her answer to everything is, you got to pay for it. We want more taxes. I think that, so I'm going to, I don't want to get in trouble. No shade to CTU or to SEIU, but if they are going to run the government, then in my estimate, with their close relationship with Toni Preckwinkle, their answer to everything is make someone else pay more, tax it. You guys should participate. I think that in Toni Preckwinkle's mind, she believes that taxing is a good thing to people. And if you live on our side of town, we like it. I think that the person that will be best will be Lori Lightfoot.
I think Lori Lightfoot is of the opinion that the business community has had it mighty good under Rahm Emanuel. He's been their champion. He has been terrific in terms of luring corporate headquarters to Chicago, and the sheer force of his personality has done that. I think that she, Lori Lightfoot, will, if she is elected, will ask the business community to continue that downtown, but to do something for the neighborhoods that are so neglected. And she will ask them to do more and to have a more of a conscience about that. She has also, at least to her credit, talked about some local taxes. And she has said, we need to have a conversation about revenue. We also need to build the case for revenue by cutting, seriously cutting, and doing things like maybe eliminating the treasurer's office and the city clerk's office and doing those kinds of major cutting. And the Civic Federation has recommended some very serious cutting, like, for example, merging the water department with the Metropolitan Reclamation District. Can you imagine, you know, taking two units of government and merging them together, or taking the pension funds and merging them together, and not creating, you know, units of government just because, maybe merging even the CTA and the RTA and the Chicago Department of Transportation. Now, I don't know if she'll do that, but if she does do the serious cutting, and then she's also talked about some local sources of revenue. She's talked about raising the hotel tax for artists. She's talked about increasing the ride-sharing fees dramatically and doing that to reduce congestion and also to eliminate the city sticker, which I don't know if she'll be able to do. That's a very big item, about $100 million or more. She's talked about several taxes like that, a tax on law firms and accounting firms. So at least she's begun to think about local revenues that are in her control.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then the real estate transfer tax, yeah, which is a giant bucket of money. I mean, yeah, I think both candidates have called for really increasing that tax on million-dollar properties and above, which is something the business community is not going to like. But, you know, Lori Lightfoot is a partner at Mayor Brown, a big white-collar law firm. She knows these people. She hobnobs with these people. Maybe she thinks she can convince them that, look, this is what's best for all of us in the long run. You're going to have to sacrifice more with a tax on high-end law firms and a real estate transfer tax.
Okay, this is a question for everybody, and then we're going to combine a few that are very similar. Also submitted online from Cara Teeple. What's worse, being connected at the hip with Ed Burke, like Toni Preckwinkle, or a shill for major corporations, Lori Lightfoot?
Okay.
Who asked that question?
That's only
a question. Who asked that question?
Cara Teeple.
Who is that? Stand up.
I don't know Cara Teeple personally. Is she here? Are you here, Cara? Okay, yeah, it was an online question.
This year, being tied to Ed Burke is worse. And I don't know what you mean by shill for large corporations. Yeah. If you're a lawyer, you represent whoever. You know, I mean, I don't know why you're tarred and feathered with that. But certainly, being tied to Ed Burke, having a fundraiser at his house, promoting his son,
not giving the money
forget
back.
It.
Not giving the money
that's,
back.
I heard,
that's
I got
worse.
An inside source that says that the money got back. Somebody told me they got their check.
What, in a brown paper bag?
An envelope.
When they come back.
But remember, Ed Burke
come on,
won his
politics,
race.
It's not religion, okay?
He he's going to be in Lori Lightfoot or Tony Preckwinkle's hair for the next 4 years unless he resigns and decides to appoint his daughter or son or something to that position.
Well, you're forgetting May 3rd. That's the deadline for indictment.
Right. Yes, and unless an indictment comes down, he's in that seat. And so if he remains there, he's going to be a headache for Lori Lightfoot.
You know what? I disagree. I think that when people are under, and there are certain tables of federal officials, right, or former federal prosecutors, I think I recognized a few. When people are under intense federal hammer pressure, they want friends. They don't want to build enemies, do they?
It's just a
feeling of mine that I have about
it's, that. It's troubling that we all know the date of the deadline for indictments. So here's a couple very similar relating to Lincoln Yards and TIF and mega developments that are being pushed forward right before the election, and if the next mayor can do anything about them. These questions come from Charlie Gardner, who's a life trustee with Roosevelt University, and Lori Glenn with Think Inc. Anybody?
What about Lincoln Yards? Brian, I just don't want you to meet me in the parking lot after I say something about Lincoln Yards. What about Lincoln
Yards? Well, can the next mayor do anything to reevaluate or stop or, you know, reassess mega developments that are being shoved through now with huge TIF costs?
Rahm Emanuel is making certain that those mega projects, or at least Lincoln Yards, there are two more votes. One on the TIF, which is $1 billion, and another on the final vote in the city council on the TIF. If those go through, I don't see any stopping it. And he's doing this, rushing it through, because he fears that it could be undone. He doesn't want to leave anything to chance. He thinks it's too big a project, too many jobs, too much economic development to let slide, and so he's going to push it through.
Here's
and he's pushing that through in the 78 as well.
The signal that a lot of people in this room want to hear is what Lori Lightfoot or Tony Preckwinkle are saying about it. Have you seen Tony Preckwinkle or Lori Lightfoot? Sorry, I sound like Phil Ponce, right? have you seen them stand up? I mean, I know they say we don't like it, but have you seen them stand up and say, hey, the next, it should stop. I want all the aldermen not to vote for it. I want this to stop. She has. Oh, I missed that because of all this Smollett thing. All right, she's done that. Okay, well, maybe...
Will they show up to the TIF vote in city council?
Yeah, let's see.
That'll
let's see if she really cares.
I guess the campaign chairperson for Ms. Lightfoot.
Thank you. Thank you, Lori.
We'll see. Do you want to step to the microphone, sir, and be sworn in?
I'm listening to wiser people than me.
Anybody else on that one? We've got a few more minutes.
You know, I just think Lincoln Yards project is reflective of what has happened in the city of Chicago under Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Let me just be clear. I live in a great neighborhood. I live in the West Loop, and I've seen it explode. But I must say that as we watch these projects rise from the dust, there is a south side of Chicago and a west side of Chicago, and we talk about it in code, and we say, oh, the people on the south side and oh, the people on the west side. I just have to say that when you do these multi-billion dollar projects and there is no real consideration, yes, you have a couple of little projects over here and a little bit that you're going to spread around, I think it contributes to where we are right now. I just think it contributes to the fact that there is a tale of two, in some cases, three cities, and the Lincoln Yards project just sticks it right in your face. And, you know, I think that you got these multi-millionaire and billionaire companies that have done very well, but again, nobody has taken the opportunity to say, how do we make this big thing happen over here and spur development here? I love Lincoln Park. I love the Lincoln Yards project, but I know what it means for black people. Man, we're getting locked out of Water Tower Place. So now you got a whole nother community that you're building that we're going to be excluded from.
Well, and the mayor will argue that Lincoln Yards is generating tens of millions of dollars for the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund,
the
Share the Wealth Fund that he's created. At least he did that. That was something in the second term that he tried to do because he ignored the neighborhoods in the first term. So that's his argument on that, and that and that is a very important point. He also has created, you know, these projects when they sold the Fleet Center to make way for Lincoln Yards. They generated the money, and they're putting the new Fleet Center. They did put the new Fleet Center in Englewood. And he put the police academy in West Garfield Park. Now, those are not certainly not substitutes for a wonderful project like Lincoln Yards, if you could get it. But he is trying to use city projects as community anchors to build development around.
Friend, let me just touch on that one. So he builds the Transportation Fleet Center, and he puts it in Englewood. And is that where the trucks idle, and they create more smog, and then they create an environmental issue, and they say, hey, Englewood, we hooked you up. This is the greatest thing, so now your kids can have more asthma. It all sounds good. And it's like, yes, we're going to put a police academy right on in the west side of Chicago. But what is the relationship, not with the alderman, but what is the relationship with the police in that community? And so as you're putting these projects, it's like, once again, Big Brother telling you, this is going to be good for you black people, but hey, we got this great development over here, and you guys can come, but don't stay after 10 without your parents, because if your parents come after 10, we're going to lock you up.
I'll just quickly.
Yeah, go ahead, Paris.
The Obama Library is, I think, another development that the mayor believes is you know, a nice chestnut for the South Side. Now, I mean, obviously that's not a view that's universally held down there, especially the fact that it's going in federally protected parkland, an Olmsted designed park, and the neighbors there want some kind of agreement, a contract that they're going to see some of the riches that come the way of the neighborhood, and they're not going to be priced out of their neighborhood. But I think the next mayor, remember, there's the Michael Reese Hospital site. That's been sitting there forever. Yeah. There's the Southworks site, which, you know, a developer came in and wanted to build like a city there. This is way south, like 80th on the lake, and they just couldn't pay for the remediation costs, the environmental remediation costs. So if the next mayor could get a Lincoln Yards-type deal for Michael Reese or Southworks, you better believe that that's going to be really popular, and that'll be a huge feather in their cap.
Yeah, the Police Academy and the Fleet Center are examples of Rahm Emanuel paternalism, top-down leadership, not by consensus. This is what I am going to do for you. This is what I decided to give you. And that was the biggest problem in his leadership style. He did not build from the ground.
Major projects don't work the other way. Major projects don't work where everyone sits around with I have the talking stick, and we all sit around. It's not going to work. Franny knows this, okay? We're friends, okay? Doesn't work that way. She's just being charitable. But the thing is that Rahm overdid it. Look, nobody liked him when he came in, and fewer like him when he's leaving, except maybe CNN or wherever he's going to, because he's doing all the interviews with them, right?
Okay.
And I say bye.
We've got, thank you for that. We've got one more sort of more substantive combination of things here, and then we're going to do a quick, a couple people had a show of hands question. These two, one from Tom Donovan and one from Elizabeth Hart, relate to perhaps one of the most, if not the most important institution in our city funded by taxpayers, which is Chicago Public Schools, and two facets of that body, one, the Chicago Teachers Union, and two, leadership there, being Janice Jackson. So I'm going to combine these. You know, how will a Mayor Lightfoot specifically fare with the CTU? And secondly, will Janice Jackson still have a job with either or mayor elected?
Lori Lightfoot has said that the jury is out with Janice Jackson. It is a very difficult thing to think about another leadership change at CPS when you consider the revolving door that has been that job. I mean, we had Jean-Claude Brizard did not work out. Mm. We had Barbara Bird Bennett, who's now in the Slammer, and now we had Forrest Claypool, who had his own ethical scandal, and he was forced out.
Where is he,
this has been a disaster for Rahm Emanuel. He finally got it right in some ways with Janis Jackson. She's very charismatic. But Lori Lightfoot has problems with how she handled the sexual abuse scandal that the Tribune so beautifully exposed in such a horrible story. And so she's going to have a conversation with her. There needs to be stability at CPS. My goodness. As far as the CTU is concerned, their demands are so hefty, you have to wonder if they're not bracing for a fight or trying to instigate one. There was a strike, obviously, under Emanuel. He instigated that with his bullying missteps and canceling their pay raise and, you know, raising the strike threshold and doing all the provocative things that he did that caused that. Lori Lightfoot says, not on my watch when you ask about a strike, so did Preckwinkle, but you have to wonder whether that's not a possibility.
You know, CTU has become very different from when Marilyn Stewart ran it, where it was more of, they had a congenial relationship. They've become more of an activist fighting type of organization. And I've seen memes and posts with them telling their members to start putting up money, start saving money because they are preparing for a strike because they may not have gotten what they wanted or they may not get the person that they want. So I think that is what we should be looking at, because CTU was all in with Tony Preckwinkle and they put up millions of dollars. And so I think that's the mentality that they've had. They've been in a warlike mentality since Rahm Emanuel came. I think Janis Jackson, while she may have had some challenges dealing with the sexual abuse scandal, which was going on for a much longer time than she got there, I think I would caution Lori Lightfoot in taking a whack at Janis Jackson, because Janis Jackson, quite frankly, is what we call in our community black girl magic. She has an aura when she hits the room. She is a CPS grad. She knows how to talk to parents and on both sides, but she makes a real connection. And I think that as Lori looks to become the mayor of the whole city, she's got to figure out who is she going to bring in. And one of the first people that I think that could help her build inroads in the black community specifically is Janis Jackson.
But she's there. And we're going to find out, we will find out what Lori Lightfoot's abilities are in terms of using people like Janis Jackson and others in front of her. Because the mayor doesn't want to take, whoever the mayor is, doesn't want to have the sword in their hand. They want to have others doing the heavy lifting and the work. And for this reason, again, I said she needed, you know, I mentioned political advisors. She also needs business people, advisors. There's Lawrence Massal. There's Paul Vallis. These are people, she needs people who can go to the business community like Paul and also be able to operate in a city. I just called him up yesterday. I said, did Lori Lightfoot call you? He goes, no. I said, you endorsed her and she didn't call you? She didn't call you before the endorsement? And he said, no. You just endorsed her without having a deal? And he said, yeah. And to me, that's the kind of guy, and whether it's him and other people that are like that, that's the kind of people she needs. She'll be getting, as the chairman of her finance committee would tell us if he would just step to the microphone, all the people who are now coming around with their checks and wanting to be part of this. Are those the people, though, that she wants to count on to leave her legacy with?
We're out of time.
The teachers' union contract is going to be up for the next mayor, and the next mayor is going to have to negotiate it, and the teachers' union is loaded for bear. Amid this reality, that the infrastructure of the school system is built for about 100,000 more students than actually attend school there, and we know how toxic it is, this idea of closing schools. So there's going to be a really difficult dynamic. The other thing is the CTU, I agree with Mays, is a political force. They're a political organization. And they've not only backed Tony Preckwinkle, but they have aldermen on city council. And so you better believe that there's a handful of aldermen at least that whatever the contract ends up being negotiated by the mayor and the teachers union, the aldermen are going to have a say, the aldermen that support the teachers union. So it's not going to be an easy fight. And then there's also the police union, the FOP. They don't have a contract. And with all these reforms and more oversight and more transparency, they want a lot of money in exchange for that. They're going to want big raises. Both of those contract fights are going to be nearly impossible. I don't know how they're going to resolve themselves.
Police is going to go to arbitration for sure.
All right, on that note, please give a round of applause. Thank you so much.